Thank you very much. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Golden Goose Q1 2021 earnings call. You should have already received details to our investor relations website, where the presentation we are going to walk through and our quarterly report have been uploaded. If anyone does not have access to these, please reach out to your Goldman Sachs contact, and they will be able to share these with you. As a reminder, we were in market for the roadshow for our inaugural high-yield bond 3 weeks ago, so we will not bore anyone with details they have already heard, and we will dive straight into the Q1 earnings so we can leave a lot of time at the end for any of your questions. A replay of this call will also be available on our website at the end of this. So, welcome back, first of all, after 3 weeks from the roadshow. Proud to present Q1 numbers. We're actually +11% revenue growth happened, 34% of adjusted EBITDA margin, 6.3 million of operating cash flow, and despite COVID-19 still impacting our business mainly in EMEA, we've been also able to close the takeover of our 11 Chinese stores completed. So, all these points that I repeat, 11% revenue growth, 34% adjusted EBITDA margin, 6.3 million of operating cash flow will be now deep dived by our Paolo, our Chief Corporate. And again, thank you so much for attending the meeting and always available for any question. Thank you so much.
Hello everyone. Thank you, Silvio, for the introduction. Let's begin with, after the roadshow presentation we made a couple of weeks ago, we're happy to comment the results of Q1 2021. And for these purposes, let's start with the key highlights on page three. Net turnover is up 11%. EBITDA is up 2%. And this result, despite the persistence of COVID-19, with on average 15% of stores closed. But gentlemen, what's really important is the current trading as of mid of May, with a turnover up more than 30% as compared to the same period last year. This trend is in line or even above our expectation and makes us confident to achieve our 2021 budget. Our other two key messages from this slide are, first of all, that we confirm to be a global brand with 60% of our turnover made outside EMEA, and second, that we are very well balanced between distribution channels, with 55% of our turnover made through direct-to-consumer channels. Last but not least, in January, as Silvio was told you before, we bought back 11 stores from our Chinese partner, with a cash out of 1.9 million, of which 1.3 million for inventory buyback. Also, thanks to this, we count now 140 directly operated stores at the end of March. Now, let me comment more in detail our profit and loss. I'm on page three. Starting from the top, page four, sorry. Starting from the top, net turnover grew by 8.1 million or 11% versus Q1 2020. This result is mainly driven by an extremely positive performance on wholesale and digital channels that, as we'll see later, grew respectively by 13%, 13%, and 60%. Retail is flat, impacted by the decision to stop all deliveries to our Korean duty-free partners due to continued lack of international tourism observed in the region. But adjusted for duty-free, the performance of the channel is positive by 29.9%, despite the negative impact of some regional lockdowns and prolonged social distancing measures leading to reduced traffic. Cost of goods sold is increasing less than proportionally with a +9% as a combination between the shifting towards DTC channel, production cost, and merchandise mix optimization. As a result, net margin is up to 50.9 million from 45.2 million, representing 63.4% of the turnover, 80 basis points above last year. Selling and distribution expenses increased by 4.5 million, mainly explained by our direct-to-consumer expansion. In fact, 1.8 million are due to additional depreciation and amortization costs, of which 500,000 euro related to expansion CapEx and 1.3 million to the right of use of assets according to IFRS  16. 1.4 million of increase is related to personal expenses and variable commission on DTC, while 1 million is due to logistic expenses mainly driven by the growth of digital sales and rising tariffs by reason of COVID-19. G&A, general and administration expenses, increased by 4.7 million, primarily due to 3 million of amortization costs related to customer relationship as a result of the final purchase price allocation of the acquisition goodwill. Marketing and advertising expenses increased by 1.3 million, being gradually increasing our effort in marketing initiatives in order to be ready to take on opportunities arising from the second part of 2021. Bottom line, despite the persistence of COVID-19 and the tough comparison versus last year, we recorded an extremely encouraging adjusted EBITDA, equal to 26.9 million, 500,000 euro above last year, and with a high expectation to strongly increase this advantage in Q2. Now, let's speak about geographic and channel split. I'm on page five. Let's start from geography. America grew across all distribution channels, generating a net turnover of 23.8 million, with an increase of 24%. APAC generated a net turnover of 21.4 million, is negative -5% if compared with last year, but is all due to the decision to stop any delivery to our Korean duty-free partners due to the lack of international tourists observed in that region. In fact, adjusted for duty-free, the performance of the region is positive by 35%, with both retail and digital channels strongly positive. EMEA grew by 14% versus Q1  2020, as a combined effect of strong growth on wholesale and digital channels, only partially offset by the decline observed on retail as a consequence of a tough comparison base. Consider that 40% of stores were closed in Q1 2021 in EMEA versus 18% in Q1 2020. In terms of channel, retail is flat, but adjusted, as I was saying before, for duty-free, the performance is positive by 29%, despite the negative impact of some regional lockdowns and prolonged social distancing measures leading to reduced store traffic. Digital. Digital continued to show robust positive performance in all geographies with a 60%+ versus last year, while wholesale posted a double-digit growth over last year, +13%, benefiting from the decision to cut spring/summer 2020 orders in 2020. Now, let's flip to page six to discuss about trade working capital and CapEx. About trade working capital, the first good news is that despite the turnover increase by 11%, trade working capital has decreased by 1.4 million as compared to the same period last year, thanks to the combination between the increase of inventory, 3.6 million, in accounts receivable, 2.1 million, but totally offset by 7.1 million of increase in payables. Trade working capital, calculated as a percentage of the last 12 months revenues, is equal to 10% and is perfectly in line with our expectation, being consistent with our normalized past performances. On the same page, down on the left, an overview of our capital expenditures. During the first three months of 2021, we spent 5.1 million of CapEx, of which 2.5 million for retail expansion, 1.7 for HQ facilities, mainly related to the new headquarters here in Milan, and 0.9 million for digital and information technology. Last year, same period, we spent 6.5 million. The major part of the difference is related to a different time shift of retail new openings and the new Korean headquarters investment that occurred last year for an amount of 1.1 million. Now, we are ready to comment the cash flow development. 6.3 million is our operating cash flow before taxes and financial interest, and adjusted for expansionary CapEx, we land at 8.8 million. As I was saying before, this result is perfectly in line with the expectation and is driven by the normalization of trade working capital dynamic. In fact, on an LTM basis, the operating cash flow is equal to 57 million, generating a cash conversion of 64%, in line with our guidance of 55%-60% and in line with our past numbers. Trade working capital as a percentage of turnover on an LTM basis is equal to 10% from 11% of Q1 2020. Of course, if you look at the chart, the dynamic of Q1 is impacting, but simply because of the exceptional trade working capital we had at the end of 2020 that represented only 4% of the total turnover, while we normally swing between 9%-13%. All the difference is due to payment of payable we made during Q1 for inbound activities of Q3 2020. In fact, the percentage of payable on total turnover is 23%, perfectly in line with Q1 2020, but down 600 basis points if compared with the 29% we had at the end of the year. Now, let's have a look at the debt profile that, taking into account that we met not more than 3 weeks ago, is substantially unchanged. 446 million of net debt with 102 million of run rate pro forma EBITDA, which leads to a stable 5.3 net leverage ratio. Now, I'm proud to leave the speech to Silvio to drive us through the outlook for 2021.
Hello again to everyone. Now, we'll follow the outlook for the next coming months. Net turnover will well in excess of +30% as of May 15th. Vaccination campaign in Europe accelerating the return to normal. Focus on DTC strategy, which means conversion of main wholesale partner into a concession agreement from fall/winter 2021. 25 new openings expected by the end of the year, +11 coming from acquisition from Chinese partner, and omni-channel project on digital. Focus on CRM activities such as new channel activations, attribution model setup, evolution of marketing initiatives. Release of first non-financial statement on voluntary basis by April 2022, focusing on ESG performance in 2021. Of course, be ready for the post-pandemic scenario. This is all by us, and I really thank you so much. Paolo, I don't know if you want to add anything.
No, we are ready for the Q&A session.
Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you have joined us online, please click the Request to Speak flag icon. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star followed by two, and when preparing to ask your question, please ensure you are unmuted locally. Our first question comes from Marco Gironi from T. Rowe Price. Marco, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, guys. A couple of questions from me. The first one is, I'd like to understand a bit more the revenue growth, really. To do that, we need to understand a bit better the how the pandemic hit you last year. So 30% year to date is obviously great. But can you just remind me, I'm assuming that April and May were probably your worst COVID months last year. So could you just remind us on the shape of the hit you had last year, so we don't extrapolate wrongly. My second question is about the interest paid in the cash flow statement. I see it was $7.25 million in Q1 this year. This obviously does not include the interest bill for the new bond. So could you just explain to me that figure? It may include some of the IFRS lease payment interest and the old interest. So I just want to get that cleared. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for the question. Let's start with the first question related to Nova. You are right, in April and May last year, almost all Western-based stores, I mean EMEA and America, were closed. And this plus 30%, we have a mid of May, we assume that will increase from now by the end of this second quarter. While starting from Q2 and Q4 last year, Q3 all store was almost open, of course impacted by COVID, by lack of tourism, but the worst quarter we had in 2020 was Q2.
Okay. Just on that point, would it be possible to post to your IR site the quarters for last year? It will just help us understand and have better calls with the following quarters as we can, you know, form an expectation of seasonality. I don't know if it's possible. It'd be good if you can.
Sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
If you could disclose your quarter results from last year, Q1 20, well, Q2 20, Q3 20, would help so we can build quarterly forecasts for you guys.
But you mean in terms of revenues, in terms of EBITDA?
No, the full financials, if you have them.
But, you know, in the OM, because I don't have the number here, but in the OM we have the first half of 2020, because as you know, we had to split our financial year in two different semesters. Then it's sufficient to make the difference between what we find in the OM and what we have in this presentation. But if I'm not wrong, let me transfer properly the EBITDA we had last year at the end of the first half was 37 or 38 million, while in Q1 2020 it was 26. Then it implies that in Q2 we made 10 million last year of EBITDA. Of course, I cannot tell you what is our forecast because we are not speaking about a forward-looking statement, but for sure we are pretty confident to overachieve the result of last year in Q2 because of the closure of the store.
Understood. Okay, that's helpful. I'll get back to those figures.
Okay, in terms of the question related to 7.1, million of financial interest, 6 million are related to the bridge loan, then are interest paid for the bridge, while 1 million is related to the calculation of IFRS 16 financial interest, and is related to, you know, the fact that rent according to IFRS are registered as financial liabilities, and then one part of the rent we pay is reclassified under financial interest.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Menelaos Tsakounis from Jefferies. Menelaos, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and congrats on the strong results. I wanted to focus more on something that we read a couple of days ago on Milano Finanza. Mr. Campara said that revenues were expected to be about 360 million for 2021 and a stable EBITDA margin of 32%. Could you confirm that guidance, although you said you're not giving guidance, future guidance, that has been publicly said? That's the first question. Then the second question, referring to the same article, is the statement that you're very excited about going public once the acquisition has been better integrated. Would you give us a timeline on that? That's it for me. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for the congratulations. I will start saying that that interview was quite unlucky because, you know, interviews are made by two people, the people who speak and the people who write. And said that, I prefer we did not to speak about forward-looking numbers, while out of confirming that our current trading is about 30% and the business is going very, very well. We are very confident to consolidate the trend and to be able to reach out our budget by the end of the year. Talking about the IPO, I will say again that it was something that has been really, really edulcorated, and it was not exactly my word, but said that we basically started the journey now with Amira. If we consider the events of the last year and companies still recovering now, trending volumes in those regions currently affected by COVID restrictions, and GG has been always started and now working on those value creation levers to drive next phase of growth, and but the journey is ahead of us as we need to deliver on important projects like POS development, omnichannel projects, CRM, conversions of main of the wholesale partners into concession agreements. So the creation of value is going on. And for sure, what you've been reading is part of the story, but the emphasis that was given by the journalist, actually, it was honestly a little bit too much. This is my point of view.
Thank you very much. That's very clear. But you do confirm that IPO is something that you do think about, and it is in the future plans.
It's part of the options.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Nicholas Remy from Assured Investment Management. Nicholas, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the presentation. Just two questions on my side. So what is your expectation for the evolution of working capital for the rest of the year? And on the margin, so we have a slight dilution of the EBITDA margin because of, like, stores opening, etc. Do you expect to keep this margin at the same level, or do you expect further dilution in the next quarters?
Well, thank you for the question. Let me start with the trade working capital. The first question related to trade working capital. As I was saying before, what is very strange is the dynamic we had in Q4 last year, because we normally end our trade working capital at the end of each quarter between 9% and 12-13% of our total turnover. In Q4, at the end of 2020, we recorded a 4%, mainly driven by the strange dynamic we had in terms of inbound activities, and strictly related to inbound is the payable dynamic we had in Q2 2020. Then starting from this 4% of the end of 2020, we now are at 10%. We don't expect to swings too much from this 10%. Of course, we are seasonal, even if not so much, but inbound activities, outbound activities are a little bit impacted by different months. But at the end, we expect this dynamic is stabilized at this level of 9-13%. Then, answering in a different way, we don't expect a huge impact like we had in Q1. The other question, sorry, was related to
the dilution of EBITDA. Your EBITDA margin.
You know, the yes, it's true. We diluted a little bit our EBITDA margin because simply because last year Q1 we recorded 36% of EBITDA margin, but simply because in January and February almost all stores were open and we started to close our store mid of March. Then dilution is due because we substitute 36% on LTM basis. These 36% of EBITDA margin we made in Q1 2020 with the 34% we made in Q1. From the future, we expect to stabilize or, let me say, even a little bit increase this percentage because on LTM basis, because the comparison now is favorable. As I was saying before, last year in Q2, we recorded between 10 and 11 million of EBITDA margin. That is very low. And then we are pretty confident to be able to not to dilute, but even to increase a little bit the percentage on LTM basis.
Okay, thanks a lot. And just one more question, if I may. Do you have a like-for-like performance?
Yes, when we speak about like-for-like, we speak about the same scope of business growth. Then out of these 11% of growth in Q1, 13 is related to same scope business. Minus 7 is the percentage, the impact of duty-free. We closed, not we closed, but we decided not to deliver. And the remaining 5.5% is related to new business. And this is the bridge of our plus 11. 13, same scope business, minus 7 related to duty-free, and plus 6% related to new business, new openings.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to register a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypads. We have a question from Julian Martin from Aberdeen Standard Investments. Julian, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, morning, guys. First question, I just wanted to understand a bit more what's the conversion of the main wholesale partner into a concession agreement from Fall Winter 21 and relates to.
Thank you for the question. This is Silvio. We are very proud about this move because moving from wholesale to concession does not mean that we are changing our business model. It means that just for the key account of wholesale, I give you just some examples like Nordstrom, really the big partners that are moving big numbers with Goldman, the world, and we've seen a great opportunity to really drive the merchandise. Which are the positive effects on this? First of all, the possibility to do not lose in sales, because by definition, when you have a partner that just buys merchandise, you will have opportunities that you cannot reach because of the limitation of the quantities. While going in concession, we can create a synergy between the merchandise that we offer in our stores together with the merchandise that we offer on the floor of these partners. So in according to the logic of omnichannel, this will help us, Golden Goose, to create efficiency in order to use the same bulk of merchandise for all the channels, and we will be able to grow in revenues with the same locations that now are offered with these wholesaler partners. In this moment, we will start, just for your reference, with Nordstrom, and it's going to be the first, with America, and then with My Teresa, which is the e-tailers, in order to test this also on an online partner. We think, you know, it's going to be fantastic. Just another little tip, we're going to be together with Chanel in doing this with Nordstrom, and we're going to be together with Kering Group at My Teresa. So again, Golden Goose is really always at the first in order to move forward to new solutions in order to give efficiency and best sales to our consumers.
And so the I guess the impact of that is you're holding on the inventory in those concessions now as opposed to selling directly to your wholesale partners previously.
Absolutely yes, but why can we do that? According to the sell-through that we were used to consolidate in the last 10 years with these partners, we were usually around 92-95%. So we've seen more opportunities rather than risk on these because, again, we are not going to produce additional merchandise for these new concessions, while we will use them in order to inject merchandise that maybe, you know, is not selling that great in one of our retail stores in order to create additional efficiency. So this will help us to increase inventory rotation and also eventually profit customers and consolidated customers. And one more thing, which is super important, always at full price, which is another of the risks that you could eventually have if you keep on leaving these big old traders go along. Why this way would be a fantastic way, you know, to control also your final price.
And the partner you're talking here on the slide 9, is that Nordstrom?
Paolo? Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Then my second question is on the duty-free sales. Which channel is that booked in? Is that in a wholesale?
No, duty-free are classified under retail channel because the price we make to them is a retail price minus a commission. Then it's more close in terms of revenues to a retail price than a wholesale price. And this is the reason why retail is flat in Q1 because of this impact. It counts, considers 6.5 million. We shipped last year in the first 2 months of the year. After these two first months, we stopped any, of course, delivery. These duty-free are still open, but in this moment, as you can imagine, the international tourism is almost close to zero. Is made mainly by Chinese tourists. Then what we are doing now is to wait what will happen. We prefer to maintain inventory in our warehouse instead of selling to them, avoiding them the risk to have some market contamination, discounts, and something like that. But at the moment, you know, the situation is still unclear, and then this is what we record in Q1, and at the moment we're not forecasting anything from this channel. Maybe it's a prudent way, but we want to work in this way, and let's see what will happen in second semester.
Okay, but you don't operate those stores yourself. It's done by a concession partner or another operator.
It's a good question because it's a strange model because we sell to them at a retail price minus the commission. But personnel is in our cost. Personnel is of Golden Goose,
they don't have, not all, but they generally don't have right of return. Then it's a very hybrid model, typical of Korea, because, for example, in China is different. If you run duty-free in China, they have right of return. But this is the way they work. All we have four duty-free there, partners, and they work in the same way.
Okay. And so could you say globally how many duty-free stores do you have out of your existing retail network, store network?
We have four duty-free in Korea and one in China.
But you don't have any other... No, I was going to ask, you don't have any other duty-free Golden Goose stores in Europe or America?
No. At the moment, no. What we did last year in Q4 was to open a pop-up in China. Because, you know, duty-free business in Korea is made by Chinese. Chinese last year were tight in China, and then they started to develop some area in the country, start building also a duty-free model. We had the possibility to open a pop-up, temporary duty-free, and now we are waiting to understand how it's performing. I can tell you that the first number are pretty good. Then we hope and we are pretty confident to be able to have not a temporary but a stable duty-free in that area. Then maybe this is what could happen, not in 2021 or end of 2021, 2022, a shift from Korea to China, but not for Golden Goose but for all major players.
Yeah. Are you looking to expand to Hainan, for example? I think many duty-free players are looking to go there.
Yeah.
Okay. And then my last question, sorry, is just on the previous question from Marco Gironi on the lease liabilities, on the cash flow statements. It'd be great in the future if you could split the interest paid on these liabilities as well as the debt repayment on these liabilities in your cash flow statement, so that we can see clearly what's paid on actual financial debt and repayment of actual financial debt.
Got it. Sure.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Mehmet Deri from Oddo BHF. Mehmet, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Most of my questions were actually answered, but a question on the EBITDA margin. So you guys tell us that you have a...
Hello?
Mehmet's line has disconnected. I'll move on to the next question. Our next question is from Kashif Riaz from Muzinich. Kashif, your line's open. Please go ahead.
Well, hi, guys. Just a clarification on one of the earlier answers on the same-store sales performance. So you mentioned that the 13% positive growth with respect to same-store sales. So that's for the overall business, right, including the online and the wholesale, or were you just talking about the retail bit for that 13% positive growth?
Sorry, the line is not so good. And can you repeat the question, please?
Hi, sure. Is it better now?
Yeah, definitely.
Much better.
Okay, so I was just, you mentioned that there was 13% same-store sales growth during the quarter. So is that including the online and the wholesale business, or were you referring just to the retail part of the business?
It's including also the online part. We mentioned e-tailer of the business.
Okay, so do you have the same store sales number for your own stores, by any chance?
This is, you know what, this is a metric that we don't look at, that we don't disclose, because
now that the business, we prefer to speak about direct to consumer because we have a lot of interaction between between digital and physical store. I mean the omnichannel services, buy online, pick up in store, and etc. Then what we disclose is this 13% of same scope of business. But another thing, if I would provide a number, it would be extremely, but extremely good because we had last year the lockdown in America, the lockdown in EMEA, store closure in China, then is also not representative at all of the situation. Like it wasn't the opposite last year as a negative number.
Yeah. No, I get that. I was just because obviously the company is investing a lot in opening new stores, so I was just hoping to see how those new stores are performing, not just compared to last year, but also going forward, just to get an understanding of if how successful the strategy of opening your new stores is. So that's kind of my question.
Let me answer by geography. The best country in this moment is America, that is performing extremely, extremely well in all the channels and also in retail. We are beating our budget, but like it happened last year in Q4 with mainly the new openings. EMEA at the moment is suffering, but because in Q1 2021, the number of store closed was higher than last year. As I was saying before, 40% of weeks of store closed. Then now what we are seeing in the first, in this Q, Q2 is a slow but progression in the recovery. Now in the major part of European country stores are open. Of course, we don't have international tourists, but at least people can shop in their own country. China is performing very well. It's not at the level of America, but very well. And also Korea is performing well. Then, generally speaking, out of EMEA, that is a little bit in delay, but for this specific reason, the performance very well, and this is the reason why we keep pushing our strategy to open on average 25 stores per year.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks very much.
We now have Mehmet's line back on. So Mehmet, I'll just open your line.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Hey, great. Thank you. You guys mentioned in the on slide 3 that the net turnover was in excess of 30% until mid May. Can you give us also a sense of the margin until that date?
Honestly speaking, we don't have at the moment a precise number in terms of margin, but we don't expect any bad surprise, only good surprise from the margin being growing in terms of sales.
Okay. And then can you give us also a number for the volume sold year over year in the first quarter or preferably also until mid-May?
This is not a KPI we make public, but simply because volumes, you know, is we are adding a pair of shoes, pieces of socks, and is not, let me say, representative. Then, honestly speaking, I don't have this number because it's not a KPI we monitor.
Okay. And then just on the cost structure, because you have already mentioned that the cost increased year over year in the first quarter, and then you just have opened so far 14 stores. You will open more this year. On this cost structure, will it grow further in line with revenues, or will you expect a larger growth in costs? Can you give us a guidance there? Mm.
Let me guide the answer in according to the nature of the cost. Of course, selling distribution expenses are considering all the costs related to store, then being part of our strategy, open 25 stores on average per year, but this year we have also to add the 11 stores, maybe in terms of volumes, these part of the cost will increase for sure, because it's also a way of to reclassify that cost in our profit and loss. While general and administration expenses, we supposed to, of course, to increase, but according to increase we expect in terms of sale, but is mostly related to fixed cost. Take into consideration that in 1 year base, we have 12 million of amortization in that part. We will see 3 million each quarter of the amortization of customer relationship, but this is not a cost. This is an amortization of part of the goodwill. Then we will discuss every quarter in normalizing that number. But also in Q1, if I deduct this number, then the total amount is pretty aligned to the past numbers. Of course, the dynamic won't be simple during this year, because for sure, as compared to the previous year, 2020, we expect to go better. But also because the incidence on total turnover depend on the level of turnover, and until when the turnover is not normalized, it's very difficult to look at these percentages. For you, but also for us, because you have a little bit increasing cost, you are opening stores, but in EMEA you are not at full potential, and also in the other countries in terms of retail, then the percentage of on total turnover is a strange number. We have, when we open a store, and then when we add cost to our profit and loss, our aim is to open, we don't open store forecasting negative EBITDA impact. Then what I mean is that at the end, bottom line, even if with a different dynamic in terms of profit and loss, we expect to increase our EBITDA margin.
Okay, very clear. And then my last question is on the APAC duty free. Can you give us a number of what the sales is now for APAC duty free, or as of the first quarter, and how it was before COVID, so then we can see the upside potential for that business.
But you mean the sell-in we make to this duty free, because we don't manage the sell-out. Zero. In Korea is zero. We didn't ship anything for our decision to stop anything. They are asking some product, but we won't.
So the drop of
last year it was 6.5 million.
Okay. So 6.5 million is the potential upside if we go back to normal then in terms of traveling.
Okay, let me explain a little bit better. Being at sell-in, it's not 6.5 per quarter, of course, because sell-in, you concentrate deliveries in, like in wholesale business, at the beginning of the season. Then in 2019, or in budget, in 2019, the total potential was 10 million
in a year.
And now
10 million a year.
Also, yeah. So basically, giving you the answer, could we go back to normal over there? I honestly see very difficult, because as someone of you guys was saying before, and I agree with him, China has been rolling up a very looking forward agenda in terms of EFS and building up Hainan Island. So for sure, we can imagine something going back to Korea, because anyway, Korea is a kind of, the entertaining country in Far East, so because of the cinema, because of the fashion, because of the food, because of many reasons, for sure tourism will be back. But we are a little bit skeptical that we're going to recover necessary 100% of the volumes we were doing before. But for sure there is an upside, and we agree with you.
Okay, very clear. Okay, thank you very much. These were all my questions.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Ryan O'Hagan from Atlantic Capital. Ryan, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys, for taking my question, and congrats on what looks like a really good quarter. Just two pretty quick questions from me. Just noting on slide 8 that your run rate EBITDA is flat quarter on quarter. I mean, it's pretty recent since close, so that's understandable. But I noticed that the lease liabilities have ticked up a little bit. I assume that's related to the new store openings. But could you maybe shed some light on the kind of composition of that run rate EBITDA and how that's changed from Q4 to Q1? And just a kind of follow-up question to that, I know you guys are planning to open quite a few new stores in the remainder of the year. Should we expect to see that leverage number tick up a little bit further? Or do you plan to kind of add a pro forma adjustment to that run rate number and ultimately shake out as relatively leverage neutral? Thanks.
Okay, in terms of composition of this pro forma run rate EBITDA, you know, we disclose them and then we speak about them not more than 1 month ago, and in 3 months the situation has not changed a lot. We, of course, updated, taking into consideration that we cut the first quarter of last year, adding this quarter. But the level of adjustment is pretty consistent with the one you can find in the offering memorandum. Of course, we can follow you up with more details if needed. In terms of what we expect for the future, is a good question because this adjustment is driven, if you remember, by some adjustment related to COVID. The COVID impact on retail new openings, then we integrate space for the missing weeks when stores were closed. Also, we normalize our travel expenses because of lockdown and then the impossibility to travel. And other adjustments that we expect, and we hope, of course, that will disappear in the incoming quarters. Then what we expect is that the difference between the last 12 months adjusted EBITDA and the last 12 months pro forma run rate EBITDA will decrease with the first one, the LTM adjusted EBITDA, that will jump very close to these 102 in the incoming quarters. Then this is our expectation. And the normalization, what we expect in a normal scenario is to normalize this adjusted EBITDA only taking into consideration new store openings, because all the other adjustments are related to COVID.
Got it. That's really helpful. Thanks for taking the question.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a final reminder, if you would like to register a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. We have no further questions, so I'll hand back over to you, Silvio.
Nothing else by our side. I just want to thank everyone for the kind collaboration and looking forward to see all of you. Thank you so much.